Welcome, everybody. Nice to see you guys. We have a nice Zoom crowd tonight. Just lovely. Shlomit Ovadia, have we ever met? You have to unmute.
Oh, yeah, I have it on mute. I'm in Nicaragua, and where I am right now is very loud, but we have met. I went to like a shiur that you did at the Den a few weeks ago.
Oh, great. Oh, yeah, okay, wonderful. We missed you last night.
Yeah.
Okay, great, welcome. Okay, we're going to get started. We're here to talk about some themes in the Haggadah and to give you some questions to ask at the Seder, and you also have the answers to the questions you'll ask at the Seder. Everyone's Seder is different, but it's always good to have some things to discuss and talk about at the Seder. So we're going to jump right in. This is a lengthy document that I have. Every year I add a few more things. I think it's called Haggadah Tidbit. That I add, and that so we're going to do the new ones for this year. So we'll start with sort of a fundamental question. For those of you sitting here, it's on page 6. It says, "What does Pesach mean?" So that's a sort of a fundamental question. The holiday is called Pesach, and in English we call it Passover, and we'll get to why. We're also going to discuss some other meanings of Pesach, which help us to appreciate some other themes of Pesach and other messages that Pesach may bring. So the notion of Pesach being the Passover, right, that comes from the idea that when God was killing the firstborn Mitzrim, Egyptians, we had put blood on our doorposts, right? And that was a sign that it was a Jewish home, and God passed over those houses, right? That's what the pasuk says here. V'amartam zevach Pesach hu laHashem, from Shemot Yudbet. You shall say it is a Passover sacrifice to the Lord. Why? Asher pasach al batei b'nei Yisrael, that God passed over, as we see the translation here, the houses of the Israelites in Egypt, binagfo et Mitzrayim, when he smote the Egyptians, v'et batenu hitzil, but he saved our houses, v'yikod ha'am l'yishtachu, the people then bowed in homage. So this pasuk is understood by Rashi and others in terms of explaining the word pasach, that God sort of jumped over the houses of the Jews, or the malach ha'mavet, God's emissary that night, passed over the houses of the Jews, and we survived. That is one very well known explanation of the word Pesach. But I'd like to share. Let me stop by asking a question. Has anyone ever heard of a different meaning of the word Pesach, other than God passing over our homes?
Like Pesach, like the mouth speaks.
Pesach, okay, great. That's the mouth speaks. So what happened that night? How would that fit into what happened, like this pasuk that night, do you think?
I don't know. But I guess that works well when you're saying over the Haggadah, right, that you're supposed to talk about.
Right, that's true. That's very true. And I mean, it's very important, right? One of the fundamental differences between a slave and a free person is the ability to speak freely, right? So the notion of splitting the word Pesach into two words, Pesach, the mouth that speaks, is very important in terms of understanding one of the fundamental differences between a free person and a slave. A slave actually has a voice, but their voice doesn't matter, right? I was just thinking about this also in connection with this week's Parsha as we start Sefer Vayikra. A lot of people aren't aware of this, but essentially the avoda that took place in the Beit HaMikdash on any given time, whenever Karbanot were brought, The Kohanim didn't speak. There was like no speaking part for the Kohen. If you were bringing a sin offering, so the person who brought the sin offering put their hands on the animal and they admitted their sin. But the Kohen, who then did all the rituals with the animal, didn't speak. In fact, there's a Jewish a scholar, Kaufman, I think is his last name, who actually termed the Beit HaMikdash and the Mishkan the sanctuary of silence. I guess the only thing you heard were animals being killed or animals being brought in before they were going to be killed. Like the Kohanim didn't speak. So it's very interesting to contrast that with the notion of Pesach. And Joe's point actually goes even further, right? Because the whole night of Pesach is about speaking, right? The whole mitzvah is Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. We have to tell the story. And you don't fulfill the story of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim by just remembering it. You actually have to say it out loud. Pesach, Matzah, Maror. So the notion of Pesach is very important. Okay. Any other understandings, explanations of the word Pesach, other than the mouth that speaks or this notion of passing over? Sarah, did you want to say something?
Sorry, I didn't realize it was off mute.
That's okay. All right. So let's look at this. I came across a really interesting explanation in a book called Kerem Lishlomo, written by Mordechai Greenberg. I don't know who Mordechai Greenberg is, but he is from Yeshivat Kerem Biavne. And for those of you who have the sheet in front of you, it's on page 8, the page labeled 8. And we're going to read it in Hebrew. I will translate it as we go. If you have a pen or a pencil, you want to take some notes as we go to. And if you want me to send you this document, actually, you know what I'll do? I'll put this document right now, the link to this document in the chat. So that way, anyone on Zoom could, if they want to, open the document and print it out if they want to have it in their possession or use it at the Seder. We'll be able to print it. All right, just put it in the chat and you can print it if you want. Okay, so here we go. HaPerush HaMekubal L'Shem Pesach Hu Shakadosh Baruch Hu B'Darko L'Haroget B'Kurei Mitzrayim Mitzrayim. So as we said, the accepted explanation of Pesach is God, on his way to kill the Egyptian firstborn, dileg me'al batei b'nei Yisrael v'lo hargam. He skipped over the homes of the Jews and did not kill them. V'al neis ha'atzalah nikra ha'chag hazeh b'shem Pesach. And because of that miracle, because God passed over, we call the holiday Pesach. Al shem ha'pesicha v'hadilug me'al batei b'nei Yisrael. To commemorate or to name the holiday after the skipping over of the Jewish homes. Shelo shaha beveitam, that God did not spend any time there. She'ilo ya nechnas leveitam haita makam mit cholalim gamalem, that had God entered, then the Jews would have been subject to the plague as well. L'peirus zeh, anu mishabchim l'kadosh baruch hu al shelo paga b'bechoreinu b'sha'ashu hakika et b'korei Mitzrayim. So this Perush focuses us on Thanksgiving, which is a central theme of Pesach. You know, we have two mitzvot regarding Yetziat Mitzrayim. We have Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim, the obligation, which is a daily obligation, right, to remember the Exodus from Egypt. We fulfill that mitzvah. One way to fulfill that mitzvah is the third paragraph of Shema, right? So that we could do that. Otherwise, sometimes they're tukim, but there's a daily obligation to remember the Yetziat Mitzrayim. And then there's the yearly obligation to tell the story of the Yetziat Mitzrayim. The question is, what's the difference practically between them? So one of the differences is when it comes to Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, the mitzvah that we're going to fulfill at the Seder table, one of the elements that has to be there is there has to be an expression of gratitude. That's part of it, which is not necessary for the daily mitzvah of remembering. The daily mitzvah, we have to remember we were slaves, God freed us, You don't have to also express gratitude. When it comes to the Seder night, we're obligated to express gratitude. That's why it says at the end of the Haggadah, right, that whole thing. Therefore, we are obligated to thank God because that's part of the mitzvah. So that is, that comes from the word Pesach that God passed over. However, the author here is going to offer another really interesting, I think, inspirational idea. Ulam, second paragraph. Perush ze eno mechuvar. This explanation doesn't really make sense. So he's not only going to offer a new one, he's going to challenge the original one. Don't tell your kids because this is what they learn in school, and we don't want to tell them that there's no Santa, right? We just want them to appreciate that this is the main meaning of Pesach, and it's true, but he's going to offer another one. Lam perush ze eno mechuvar. If God was the one who skipped from house to house, as it says in the Haggadah, Anivalo Malach, that I did this and not an angel, Anivalo Shaliach, I did this and not an emissary, Ketzad Nifarnes etam mikra, v'lo yitain hamashchit lavo al batechem lingov. How do we explain the verse in Shemot chapter 12 that says God did not allow the mashchit, some angel of death, right, to enter the homes? Harisha Shaliach, Haraga B'nei Mitzrayim. According to the Torah, it sounds like it was not God, but it was someone else, something else. According to the Haggadah insists, Ani v'lo Shaliach, God, me, and not a Shaliach. So what he's suggesting is this whole idea that God passed over. Well, we're not so sure. Who passed over? Was it God? Was it Shaliach? We're not sure. Then he quotes Rav Kook to offer a different explanation. Harshanut michudeshet umaftia matzia harav kook zatzal bidirashotav. He says a surprising and new explanation was suggested by Rav Kook. Kasheritiach Eliyahu bifnei nevi'ei habal ad matai atem psachim al shnei hasi'ifim. So you see the word in there, the fourth word. We're right here on the bottom of the page. The fourth word in that sentence is psachim. Mm-hmm. So when the Jewish people during the time of Eliyahu, they were playing both sides of the fence. They were worshiping God and they were worshiping Baal. And Eliyahu said, "How long are you going to psachim al shnei sifim? How long are you going to be standing on both sides? Like, pick a side. You're either a pagan or you're a monotheist, right? You either you serve God or you serve Baal." So the word psachim here, which is Pesach, ein ha-perush shehem dilgum aleihem. Eliyahu is not saying that the Jewish people jumped over any of the gods. Ela shehem nachu aleihem. They rested with each god. Right? The Jewish people at that point were worshiping both. So here, Rav Kook is suggesting that the word Pesach doesn't mean to skip. It actually means the opposite. It means to stay or to stand with something. Pam al sa'af u'machshava zo, u'pam al sa'af u'machshava acherin. Sometimes the Jews were on the side of Baal, and sometimes the Jews were on the side of God. V'chein midaleg al haharim, also the pasuk in Shir HaShirim that says God jumps on the mountains, mikapetz ha-gva'ot, ein perusho shehadod midaleg me'al rashay haharim u'mirachef alayim, ela mirachef me'rosh har echad l'rosh har echad. It's like jumping from one mountaintop to the other mountaintop. It's not skipping, you're actually landing on it a little bit before you move on to the other. Umimenu nikvatz al rosh har nosaf, right? You're on one mountaintop, then you jump to the other one. We're on the third line of the page here. Af makat b'chorot, so similarly, when it comes to makat b'chorot, ein perusho shehashem pasach me'al b'nei Israel. The explanation is not that God jumped or skipped B'nai Yisrael, Hanu Sha'avar Alehem B'dilugo, that God skipped our homes, Ela Lehefech, Shtenach Al Habatim. This is so beautiful. What did God do that night of Makat Bechorot? He came into our houses. Right? Who was jumping around? The Mashchit was jumping around. But who was Poseach? Who was whatever that means, in our case now, going into our homes? God. Now, presumably, why was it going into our homes? To protect us against the Mashchit.
Oh, wow.
And so now we have a whole other picture of what's going on, right? God, each Jewish home had the presence of God in there. And when that loud knock on the door came, right, God was there to not let the Mashchit in. Sharei Mitzrayim haita makom tumah ad she'asur ha'alit palel b'tocha v'yal kein amar Moshe kitzeti et ta'ir efrash et kapay al Hashem. Rav Kook is saying there's even a bigger chidush, that Mitzrayim was such a place full of tuma, full of impurity, that God didn't want to be there. Which is why Moshe said, when I leave Egypt, I'll be able to pray to God, because God's not here. This is a godless place. But God made an exception on that night and allowed himself to enter into Mitzrayim. Zehu shid gisha haTorah. This is what the Torah means and emphasizes. Shem pasach abatei bnei Yisrael b'Mitzrayim. That God pasach, which now we're understanding to mean went in. Af she b'derech klal shgosh baruch hu mishares chinato be'eretz hu oseh zot be'ofen shehu mukaf kedusha ve'ein chulin. Usually God's presence is in a special place, like the Beit HaMikdash or the Mishkan, not in someone's house. The Kosha came Tumah, certainly God doesn't like to be in Tumah. Chotatin makom HaKadusha, he locks himself away. Kam b'Mitzrayim, Hishra, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shechinato b'tochechei HaTumah. Kedei litzur b'chol beit kedushat mizbeach. To turn every house, actually, into a sanctuary. Shefshar yela hakriv alav karban pesach. Why? Normally a karban can only be brought in Beit HaMikdash or the Mishkan. But the Jews were told to bring a karban in their house. So by God entering into their house, he turned it into a Beit HaMikdash. That's why they were able to do the karban pesach. Right? Umikevan shekol bayit haya mukaf b'tumat Mitzrayim, al kein hayat sorech b'diluk psicha. Since there was so much tuma, actually God had to come in. Mibayit lebayit lashrot sham shchidato, to sort of cleanse it and to put his presence there. L'daleg mimenu lebeit Yisrael, Acher lahachshiro b'kedushat mizbeach, to give it the sanctity. So let's just read this last paragraph. Hatzalatam shel Yisrael nasta b'derech zo shel hashrat shchina b'beteihem v'ashchina lo nana l'mashchit hu ha'shaliach habal harag mitraim la'avor b'tei Yisrael. God's presence is what prevented the mashchit, the angel of death, from coming into their houses. That's what saved the Bnei Yisrael. And the pasuk that says, and I went through Mitzrayim and killed all the firstborn. And the fact that the Midrash says, Chazal say, I did it and not anyone else. That's talking, right? Who went in to Bnei Yisrael's homes and not an emissary? God. Right? Mm-hmm. But the actual slaying of the Egyptian firstborn, that was done through a shaliach. The peiros ze ikar hoda'ahi al shirat hashchina b'tei Yisrael. So now it's true, we're still thanking God. We're thanking God for something entirely different. Not thanking God for skipping us. Actually thanking God for doing the opposite. Thanking God for coming into our houses and saving us. Right? It's a beautiful idea if we think about like what's happening on Pesach night. It's the anniversary, right, of that night when God allowed his presence to risk, whatever that means, his presence to be sullied by the impurity of Egypt in order to take care of us. So Pesach, again, don't destroy for your kids. Still talk about God passing over, but for the adults at the table, right? Pesach now has it could be a very powerful and empowering and redemptive idea that God, you know, comes into our life, even though it may not be the neatest thing, even though, you know, maybe we don't feel that we deserve God in our life or whatever the case may be, right? God comes into our life. That's what it means here. So a totally different, it's a 180 of what the word Pesach means, but it leaves us with a beautiful message of what we're being thankful for, that God entered into our house. Okay, I'm going to stop there for a moment and see if there are any comments or questions. For those of you who came on a little bit late, we're looking at different meanings of the word Pesach. The first one was the traditional one, that God passed over our homes. And this one is quite different. It says the opposite, that God didn't pass over the homes of Bnei Israel, but based on the pasuk that we quoted in Melachim Aleph, that Pesach means to stand on or to be with. And so God stood with us and was with us in our homes. We'll get to another one in a minute, but I just want to stop to see if any comments or questions so far. Just for those of you who are not here in person, you are missing homemade cookies. And so maybe next time. Okay, but on Pesach, I don't think we're going to have class. Okay, I want to look at another meaning of the word Pesach, which will start with this pasuk in Yeshayahu, in Isaiah. We have the word, the root, pei samachet, appearing again. I'm going to just make this bigger because I'm having trouble reading it. Okay, here's what the pasuk says. Kitziparim afot ken yagen Hashem tzivaot al Yerushalayim ganon vihitzil pasoach vihimlit. Like the birds that fly, even so will the Lord shield Yerushalayim, shielding and saving, protecting and rescuing. So this is a pasuk that explains that God protects us like a bird. We're going to see what that means in the Midrash in a moment, but you see the second to the last word in the line is Pasoach, right, which is the same root as the word Pesach, and that means V'hitzil Pasoach V'himlit, protecting, saving, protecting, and rescue. So here we see the word Pasoach, again with the same root as Pesach, meaning to protect. I'm going to share a couple of really neat Midrashim on that. One from the Mechilta. Davar acher al kanfei nesharim derech of lihiot maniach banav ben berkav. How does a bird normally protect its young or carry its young? He holds the young in its feet or between its knees. Mipnei shemit yarei mipnei ma mi shechazak mimenu. That most birds are afraid that a stronger bird that flies higher will harm them, right? So they hold their bird underneath their body and shield their baby with their body. Aval nesher, which is an eagle or something like that, ein mityare mipnei mi shechazak menu. There is no bird that flies higher than an eagle. Minichin al ktefav, they put their baby on their back. All they are afraid of is an arrow coming from earth, from the ground. There's no bird that's going to overtake them in terms of height. So they put their kid on their back. V'yinicham ben raglav mityarei hu me'avnei kala u'minachitzim shebnei adam mezarkin bo. They're only afraid of what's coming from the bottom. L'fichach oseh atzmo mechitza ben banav le'ben adam. Therefore, they create a wall, they serve, right? Because now they're going to be the ones who are going to take the brunt of the attack. And they serve as this protection between themselves and their babies. Kach asa hamakom malachei hasharet mechitza ben Yisrael Mitzrayim. That's what God did. He made the malachei hasharet become sort of a mechitza, a fence, a boundary between the Jewish people and Mitzrayim. Sheneimar vayisa malachei Elokim. That this Malach Elokim went with them and protected Bnei Yisrael. So we see the word Pasoach has the language of protecting. If we go now to number 7, where this theme sort of continues. This is a good, so if you want to share this at your Seder, this is on page 16 in the packet. If you want to share this in your Seder, you could share this either as a question of what Pesach really means, or we're going to look at another sort of wordplay. The mitzvah of Hesteba, right? That's the mitzvah of leaning at the Seder. Okay? So what does that word mean? So if you look on the bottom of the page, and right here on the screen, Vayasev Elohim et ha'am, derech ha'midbar yamsuf, v'chamushim alu b'nei yishomim etrayim. So God led the people round about by way of the wilderness at the Sea of Reeds. So Vayisav here means, the translation is that God took them in a roundabout way. Right? That's Vayisav. However, Vayisav can also mean something else according to the Midrash. And that's the Midrash we have in Shemot Rabbah on the bottom of 16 and continuing on 17. Really an amazing midrash. What does this mean that God, Vayisav Elokim, that God did this? So again, the most well-known explanation is that God took them in a roundabout way so they wouldn't encounter any hostile nations early on. But the midrash says, Mahu Vayisav, Shekifana Kadosh Baruch Hu, that God surrounded them, presumably with the clouds of glory. Kishem Shehu Omer, Vani Eyeh Lashem, La Nu'um Hashem Chomat Eish Saviv Ukigon Ro'eh Sheyaro Et Sono. It's talking about, I think I have the English of this midrash if you want to look at it. I have this English on page 17. Compared to a shepherd who was shepherding their sheep, and so they wouldn't get hurt. Kach Bishashi Atsu Yisom Mitzrayim Hayu Alufei Edom Umoav Uchinan Va'amalek Omdin V'notnin Et Ha'itza Eichlav Ol Yisrael. All the nations were there trying to figure out how they could attack B'nai Yisrael. When God saw this, Stivev Otan Shelo Yavo Aleihem, that God surrounded them. So we don't have to read anymore. So what's the connection to Hesteba? Normally we think Hesteba, the leaning, comes from the root shave. Like you could switch out the samach and the shin. Maybe they're interchangeable because they have that similar sound. Shave, save, right? So Hesteba is from the word shave, to sit in a unique way. But the midrash is saying no. Vayasev means to protect. So when we lean, we're commemorating, not because normally we say Hesteb is to commemorate that we are free. Right, that's the way a wealthy person eats, right? They lean back, they put their feet up. We don't do that anymore, but back in the day. According to this midrash, there's a different meaning of Hesteba. It's to commemorate God's protecting us, right? Because it has the same root. Hesteba, Vayasev is the same root, and Vayasev, according to this midrash, doesn't mean that God took us around in circles. It means that he circled us. He encircled us and protected us. That goes back to that other meaning of the word Pesach, right? We go back now to the beginning of the source sheet. I know we're jumping around a lot. That goes back to the meaning of the word Pesach, that additional meaning of like the bird that is Hitzil Pasoach Vimlit, right? Just the eagle protects the child. So now we have another meaning of the word Pesach, right? So now we have Passover. Mm-hmm. We have stay with, like come into our home. And Pesach could also mean to protect, which is similar to the notion of coming into the home, but we see it now taught in a different way through the midrash of God taking us through the desert and the connection to the mitzvah of Hesteba. So it's a nice idea to share about the mitzvah of leaning, or if over the course of the Seder you want to sprinkle in different meanings of the word Pesach. Now we have a few different, and there are others, but we're going to stop on this topic now, of what the word Pesach actually means.
Is there a connection between like the physical act of leaning and the idea of protecting?
I was trying to think about that. I don't know. I wasn't able to come up with one. Unless, like, you want to say it's like you would lean over to cover.
Right.
Like, I remember, I think I mentioned this. I remember my father, Aleva Shalom. I don't know if you've ever had this experience driving with a parent. I used to go to work with my father a lot. And his job, he was a salesman for a Spanish food company. So he used to go to a lot of supermarkets and take the inventory of what they had and then try to convince them to buy more inventory, okay? But so he would drive a lot in New York. And from time to time, when he would stop short, I was always wearing a seatbelt, but he would always do this.
Yeah.
Like, right, he would, if you can't see me on screen, like he would put his hand, like that's going to, like if we get into a car accident, is that going to really keep me from going through the windshield? I don't know. But that was his, like, instinct to, you know, protect me. So maybe Haseba, that's actually a nice idea. Like, you're leaning over, like, you're going to take the bullet. You're going to protect. Like, you know, it starts to rain and you have a kid in the carriage and there's no plastic thing. So you know, you cover the carriage or you put your kid under your coat or whatever we do to protect people we love. It often involves sort of comporting our body in a way which is not natural to get in front of or above, like the bird, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's I haven't thought about it until you asked the question, but that's a really nice. It's very. We just got this new Haggadah, which I haven't opened yet. It's called a traditional and radical Haggadah in four voices, and it basically. Talks about four different themes in the Haggadah, and one of them is embodiment. It's a very physical holiday.
Yeah.
So this is another element of that embodiment. We relive God protecting us by leaning over us, by maybe ourselves leaning.
Yeah.
Nice. And also you're very relaxed. So when you're safe and feel protected, you're also more motivated.
Oh, that's very nice. Oh, so we're not enacting the protection, we're enacting the result of the protection.
Yeah.
So it's not about wealth, and it's about feeling safe. That's very nice. That's a beautiful idea, right? And that's also what it also dovetails very well with the notion of Leil Shimurim, right? Pesach is called Leil Shimurim, the night of being protected. So it's customary not to say Kriyat Shema Al Hamita. Have you ever heard that? On Leil Seder, people don't say the nighttime Shema, which is there to protect us, because this is Leil Shimurim. We're in. We leave our door unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's Leil Shimurim. We're protected. So that also works nicely. Andrea has a note here. I like this idea. It fits in well with the mezuzahs that we put on our doorpost. Exactly. Right. Also, as an element of protection. Not only that, actually, I'm not sure which element you were talking about, Angia. The notion of the mezuzah actually fits in with a couple of these ideas, right? Because if Pesach means that God stepped into our homes, right? That's what the mezuzah symbolizes. That this is a Jewish place. This is a godly place. Mm-hmm. So the mezuzah symbolizes two elements of what Pesach means. One, well, first of all, it symbolizes the traditional understanding, because they still have to put the blood on their doorpost. So that's the mezuzah. It symbolizes the second notion that God is with us, because that's what the mezuzah would symbolize in our home. And it symbolizes the idea of Pesach, meaning protection, like the bird, because the mezuzah offers that element as well. So excellent. Excellent point, Andrew. Okay, great. That was a lot about the word Pesach. Let's do some quick hits now. Two more quick hits before we say goodnight. On page 12, actually start with page 10. And I'll ask a question, and anyone can answer this question, whether you're in Zoom or in person. Why do we eat matzah? I guess the theme of this night is undoing the myths of third grade, right? So why do we eat matzah at the Seder? Because we rushed out. Exactly. Okay. That's what you have in number 5 on page 10. And that's what we say at the Seder. there are the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. We have a section at the Seder towards the end of Magid, which may be one of the most important parts of the Seder, where we say as follows: Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Amar Kol Shelo Amar Shlosha Devarim Elu Lo Yatsa Yedei Chovoto. Right, remember that anyone who has not said these three things has not fulfilled their mitzvah. Likely that means they have not fulfilled the mitzvah of retelling the story of Pesach, which is the whole point that we're at the table to begin with. Okay? Those three things are Pesach, the Karban Pesach, the Paschal sacrifice, matzah, why we eat matzah, and marah, why we eat marah. So here's what, on the page, this is what the matzah symbolizes. Al-Shem Shlomo speak with Sekan Shalavotein Lachmitz at Shedigla Lehem Al-Machem Lachim. We eat matzah. Because we took out dough, but we didn't have time to let it rise, so we took it out, and then it baked in the sun, and boom, it was matzah. There's one small problem with this explanation of why we eat matzah. It's not true.
Uh-oh.
Not true. Anyone know why it's not true? Except for Paul Fishman, who may have heard me say this at the Dvar Torah earlier this evening. Anyone know why it's not true? It's not true because if you read Sefer Shemot, Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk 8, we are told, God says, bottom of page 10, God tells Moshe, this is the first of the months, right? Nisan, by the way, it's Rosh Chodesh today. Good Chodesh, everybody. To be a Chodesh of redemption, right? Mm-hmm. The Gemara says, B'chodesh b'nisan nigalu, Ubenisan atidin lihigael, right? We were redeemed in Nisan and we will be redeemed in the future. So we should all have whatever redemptions we need in this month of Nisan, personal and national. Okay. So God says it's Rosh Chodesh, Nisan, that's great. And on the 10th, you should bring the carbon and then the blood on your doorpost. And then we're now on page 12, and you're going to, you shall keep watch over it, meaning you should watch over this animal until the 14th, and then you are going to put some of it on your doorpost, and then v'achlu et habasar balayla hazeh sli'esh umatzot al mirorim yachlu. You will eat it that night with matzah and marah. So even before we left Mitzrayim, God tells us to eat matzah. What's going on? In the Magid, in the Haggadah, we're said, well, we eat matzah because we left Mitzrayim in a hurry. But here, we eat matzah because God told us to eat matzah the night before we left Mitzrayim. So, we have a problem. Any suggestions? Would the real reason for matzah please stand up?
Maybe they got the idea of matzah from that night and they were like, this is easy. We do this on the way out.
Okay. Interesting. But why did God tell them to eat matzah on that night? Why not just say, bake some challah? Right, have some bread. They weren't in a hurry that night. They know where to go. They weren't allowed to go anywhere. That's why they had to stay in their house because the Malach HaMavas was doing his thing.
He didn't want them to have leftovers.
Ah, interesting. Okay. So, but that's an interesting solution. But the problem with that solution is that it sounds like when they left Mitzrayim, they baked fresh matzah. Right, according to the Haggadah text, which I'll scroll back to, the Haggadah text says, when they left Mitzrayim, they didn't have time for their bread to rise. So it looks like they made fresh dough when they were leaving Mitzrayim, which they had planned on letting rise. And then God said, well, sorry, gang, it's time to leave. Just take whatever you have and we'll make do. So I like the leftover idea. It's very, very good for the environment and the wallet. I love it. But it doesn't necessarily jive with these two accounts. But there, by the way, I think the leftover idea is on the right track in another way, which we're going to see in a moment. Any other suggestions? What is going on here? Right? It's a question we don't always think about, but when you now, when you juxtapose these two sources, it seems like an obvious question.
Yeah.
Well, just to simplify everything, like it's this retelling to the, it's for, the whole purpose is to tell your kids. So you have to like dramatize the country.
Like, you know, dramatize.
The experience, the story, so that the kids ask the questions. I mean, it's almost like a simplified story.
Okay. Like, that is very interesting. Suggesting, so you're suggesting, I think, without saying it, that we're telling a story which isn't entirely true. For the sake of, right. So there's value in that and a danger in that, right? We don't want to, there's value in dramatizing things. There's value in adding details. That's what a midrash does. But there's also a danger because here we seem to be explicitly going against a verse, a series of verses in the Torah. But it's a fascinating idea that both happened. And so that's the one we tell because that's the one which is going to engender maybe more excitement. Okay, that's an excellent answer. I think the only thing I would think about in that answer is that that's a great answer, and that's very much within the theme of the Seder because the theme of the Seder. Is trying to make sure that we do things in a way that keep the children asking questions. Okay, excellent. I'll share an answer with you from the Abudraham, who's a medieval commentary, mostly well known for his commentary on the Siddur, but he also has a commentary on the Haggadah. I'll blow this up a little bit. Okay, so it's on the screen for those of you who are on screen, and it's on page 12 for those of you with the text in front of them. He quotes the section of the Haggadah we just talked about. And he says, Yesh l'shaol. This is a question. Kitzivo yachilat matzah lo haya mitam shelorech mitzvotekan. The reason the commandment to eat matzah was not because the Jewish people did not have time to let their bread rise. That's not the reason, as we saw. Ki kodem lachen tziva lechol matzot bistam v'lo matam ledavar. Before that, in the psukim that we saw, B'nai Yisrael were told to eat matzah with no reason given. All God says is, eat the Karban Pesach with matzah and marah, and he gives no reason. L'fikach pirei shachacham Rabbi Yosef Kimchi. So Rabbi Yosef Kimchi gives an answer. Rabbi Yosef Kimchi is the father of the Radak. The Radak is another medieval commentary on the Chumash, this is his father. Okay? His father says as follows. Shemash nitzdavu al ha-matzot kodem lachen haya al shem ha-atid. This is so cool. This notion that God told us to eat matzot the night before with the Karban Pesach is al shem to foreshadow or to consider the future. Tomorrow, you're going to eat this stuff again and because that's when you're leaving, and that's when the symbol is going to be attached to it. We're eating it now to think about how life is going to be in the future. God, who knows the future, knew that they were going to leave Egypt, and he knew that they were not going to have time. Even if they wanted to let their bread rise, their dough, he knew they wouldn't have time. Top of the left column. Even if they wanted to, they wouldn't have time for their bread to rise. Siva lechol haPesach al matzot marim lechol shivat yamim matzah. So, and God, because of the future, told them to eat the matzah that night and for the next 7 days. So this is a very nice answer. It explains the psukim and explains the contradiction between the psukim and the text of the Haggadah. I also think it gives us another idea to think about, which is, we have the ability, or God is telling Bnei Yisrael here that you have the ability to think about the future, which also a slave never does. Right? A slave is just a day-to-day existence. Just got to get through this day, right? Those of us who are not slaves, we plan ahead. Slaves can't plan ahead. They could maybe dream about being free, but they're not making plans, right? Free people make plans. So that's what's going on here, right? God is teaching us, right, that one of the things we should be thankful for at the Seder night, and in general, one of the things we should consider is the future, right? We don't just live like animals live in the moment, right? We should not just live in the moment. We should envision what we want the future to look like and then try to get there, right? Try to take steps to get there. That's what God's teaching B'nai Israel. Tonight, you're slaves. But this matzah that you're eating, that's for generations going to symbolize your freedom. What freedom? You'll see tomorrow. You could do it. You just think you could envision it. You'll see, believe me, there's a future. You're not going to be here very much longer. That's what it means, al shem ha'atid. That explains this contradiction between what's going on in the Haggadah and what's going on in the Pesukim. Okay.
You ever see that type of conflict anywhere else? Like when we're fighting rent like that?
Yeah, right? I think it's fundamental to the belief in Mashiach.
Yep.
Right? That we never believe that we've achieved our best. I think tshuva is fundamentally about, right? Repentance is fundamentally about belief. And that's the best example. Right, believing that we could be different and then taking steps to make that happen. Can you, are there any others that you're thinking of? Right, God told us we were on our way, right? Yeah.
There are examples of this.
Yeah, I think it really weaves its way through a lot of Jewish life and Jewish thought, this notion of the future, right? Mashiach, like we said, tshuva. I mean, look, another great example. What do we say at a bris or a baby naming? Kishrim shenichnas labrit, kenei kenes latorah, lechupo lemasim tovim. The kid is 8 days old, and we're already talking about their wedding, right? Because that's the way we operate. We always operate. I mean, Salvechik has this beautiful essay where he talks about Jews operate in three time zones, the present, the past, and the future, right? So much of what we do is to remember the past, but we remember the past because in order to build, actually he says differently, he says Jews never live in the present. We're always either remembering or aspiring, right? And that's what's going on here. We remember in order to aspire, and we remember the slavery in order to aspire to be free. We remember being enslaved in order to inspire redemption. So that's how a Jew lives. So it's fundamental. Yeah. Okay. One other tiny point. Question. One other tiny point. Page 17. This is from a wonderful sefer. Name I forgot, but the rabbi is David Shapiro. I mentioned him last Shabbos. He was a rabbi, I think, in Milwaukee in the 50s and the 60s. An American rabbi. This is a beautiful idea about Shabbat HaGadol. And it's a nice thought to end on. Shabbat HaGadol nikra kein al shem ha-nes ha-gadol shikrachesh bo kimuar betosvot Shabbat. There's a miracle. Why do we call it Shabbat HaGadol? Because it happened to have been on a Shabbat that the Jewish people took the carbon to slaughter, and the mitrim who would worship the animals asked the Jews, what are you doing with them? And the Jews said, we're going to kill it. And the Egyptians didn't start up with that. That's one of the explanations of what Shabbat HaGadol is about and why we celebrate it. Okay. Ulam yeshlet bonein al ikar hadavar shenikva Shabbat miyuchedet b'kesher im Chag HaPesach. Why do we have a Shabbat? Why not just celebrate the day? It was the 10th. It was the 10th of Nisan. So it's interesting, which happened to be a Shabbat that day. That's our tradition. So this is strange. Most Jewish holidays are set on the date, not the day. Like we don't celebrate Pesach, we don't celebrate Purim on the third Tuesday because Haman's decree that year fell out on a Tuesday. We just do the date, except for this. Shabbat HaGadol, we know the date. It was the 10th of Nisan, which was a Shabbos. So we always choose the Shabbos before Pesach instead of the 10th of Nisan. And we're not going to answer his question. That's for another time. We're going to get to another point. He says, second paragraph, Yetziat Mitzrayim cholala ma'aficha kivira b'chayei ha'am. The exodus from Egypt created a gigantic upheaval, revolution in the lives of the Jewish people. Am shehaya bazuz v'shasui mordaf b'lich hashach hoshach eved mushlim. Right, the Jewish people who were downtrodden and oppressed and enslaved, yatsa pit'om l'chirut olam, like in a flash, like for hundreds of years they're slaves, and now in a minute they walk out of Egypt and all of a sudden they're free. Am shakua b'mimtet shari tuma shatuf behevli mitrayim. The Jewish people, as we said earlier, who were stuck in this 49th level of impurity, and the Gemara says, halalu ovdei avodah zara, v'halalu ovdei avodah zara. It's amazing. The Gemara says about what was going on in Egypt, they, the Egyptians, were worshipping idols, and they, the Jews, were worshipping idols. It was a bad scene, according to Chazal, vis-a-vis what we were like. Zacha, but what happened? Zacha b'chamishim yom, in just 50 days, achar tzeito mishafel avodato la'amod b'tachtit har Sinai. Just 50 days later, after being in this terrible condition, slaves and idolaters, 50 days later, we stood at Har Sinai, l'shmoa kol Elokim, hearing God's voice, medaber mitocha esh vayichi, and we heard God's voice and we survived. There's a message there, which I think is similar to the previous idea. You could envision the future, right? This is envisioning the future in like a really intense way. It's a total 180, a total change. But not only that, it could be quick, right? There is the human capacity. Now, it might not always be healthy to do it quickly. Sometimes it's better to do it slowly, but it is possible in a moment, right, to change. Sometimes that happens when you have a sort of experience, and because of that one experience, you change your whole outlook on life. It was a split second. In a million years, you wouldn't have thought that way beforehand, but something happens and we change. So we have to be open to those moments where that change. Now, sometimes change is slow, but sometimes change is quick, and we have to, like I said, try to be spiritually attuned to those possibilities. There's a Gemara, which we're not going to read. You can read it on your own, Avodah Zarah. A couple of times, the punchline of the Gemara, though, I'll read to you, which is, Yatzta bat kol v'amra, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, v'kal tzaturniri muzmanin heim l'chaylam haba, b'chah Rabbi, this is the last page, v'amar, yesh koneh olamo b'sha'a achat. Someone could acquire their share in the world to come in a moment. Right? In this case, this guy lives a terrible life. He was an executioner for the Romans, and he did something a little compassionate, and God says he's immediately invited to the Olam Haba. So this notion again, right? Yesh konet olmo b'sha'achat. Sometimes you could acquire your share in the world to come, change your life just in a split second. Other times it takes many years. The end of the Gemara is v'yesh konet olmo b'kama shanim. Sometimes it takes a long time. Both of them are legitimate. It just depends on the situation. We keep ourselves open and attuned to what's going on in our life and use those moments to inspire us. That's what Rabbi Soloveitchik says about events that are negative. He says, we never could explain why. There's no way to explain, God forbid, why someone has a sick child. There's no way to explain, God forbid, why someone gets into an accident. Any explanation is usually cruel. It usually does not help the person who's suffering. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says, instead of wasting our time on that, we should internalize the moment and use it as a moment of introspection. Because these events shock us, and so it may be natural to do that. That's maybe what it means. Yesh koneh olamo b'sha'a achat. Okay, so those are your Haggadah tidbits for this year. I hope that they bring some thoughtful conversation to your Seder table, even if you don't remember the answers. The questions are great, and people will hopefully come up with their own answers. If anyone wants to review any of this with me and wants to just clarify, you can give me a call, send me a text, and I'm happy to review it with you in a little private chavrusa. This is a great pleasure. I'm sorry, I was going to do this 2 weeks in a row, but it just occurred to me I'm out next week, out of town, so we can't do this again. You know, I think the Midrash says when Mashiach comes, all the Chagim are going to be, we're not going to celebrate them anymore except for Purim. So I was going to say that hopefully we'll do this again next year, but I'm actually saying hopefully we won't do this again next year. Because if that means Mashiach will come and all we'll be doing is Purim. I don't know if that means we're going to be able to eat some Eitz on Pesach after Mashiach comes. I'm not sure how that's going to work itself out. But in any case, we should all have a Pesach where we feel God's presence in our homes, like Bnei Yisrael felt God's presence in their home in Mitzrayim. We should all feel the protection of God, like the baby eagle feels the protection of its mommy. And we should all be attuned to the opportunities in our life to love more, to be closer to God, our family, and our community. Chag Kasher V'Sameach. I look forward to seeing you all on Shabbat or on Pesach or after Pesach, on the street, whenever the case may be. Thanks for joining, everybody.
Thanks, Rabbi Gelman.
Don't forget to sell your chametz. You've gotten, whether you're doing it with me or not, just sell it. You got in my form, fill it out, bring it over, and very important. All right, all the best, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Thank you.